fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip on Route 51. Each year, hundreds of people see things in the sky that seem to defy human understanding, from flying objects to unexplained lights and sounds. What we commonly refer to as a UFO is something the government is now calling unexplained aerial phenomena, the subject of a rare congressional hearing in May. The hearing was its first of its kind in more than 50 years, lending new credence to reports of these experiences. In 2021, a landmark government report prompted the possibility of extraterrestrial visitors to finally be taken seriously by everyone from U.S. senators to Pentagon officials. But experts say 2022 could be even more profound as the search for answers continues. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. Last year, the Pentagon released a highly anticipated report on unexplained aerial phenomena, or UAP, which found more than 140 instances of such reports that could not be explained, some of which are in Wisconsin. The report came after leaked military footage and testimony from naval pilots who, after years of silence, shared their own UFO experiences. Officials were able to explain one of those incidents as a balloon, but the rest remain a mystery. And as the clamor for information has grown, so has interest from the scientific community and the public. Today, we'll take a look at UFO research and sightings in Wisconsin and learn how reports are analyzed. We'd like you to join the conversation, too, and share your own stories. Just give us a call at 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Mark O'Connell got his start in television, writing for Trek, The Next Generation, and Star Trek Deep Space Nine. His first book documented the life of Dr. J. Allen Hynek, the famed UFO researcher and inspiration behind Steven Spielberg's film Close Encounters of the Third Kind. He is currently co-executive producer and on-camera expert on a reality show, UFO Witness, and can be heard on his own podcast, Far-Fetched. Mark, welcome to Route 51. Glad to have you here.
Nice to be here, Shereen.
Chad Lewis is an author who specializes in researching the paranormal world. His research, which includes documentation of UFO sightings, alien abductions, and UFO evidence, is filled with eyewitness encounters and on-site investigations. Mr. Lewis has spent more than two decades traveling the world in search of the strange and unusual, and he's been featured on a range of TV programs. He has a master's degree in psychology and has authored more than 20 books. Chad, thank you so much for being here today.
Greetings from the Northwoods of Wisconsin.
Glad to have you. Mark, I follow you on Twitter, and you have a pinned post that said you got into the UFO scene to better understand what UFOs mean and not have some kind of argument over government cover-ups. So do you think that maybe the search for answers has been a little bit muddied by so many conspiracy theories that we hear about?
Unfortunately, yes. There are, in my opinion, there are a lot of really interesting UFO events that could yield interesting data, but they sort of get hijacked and polluted and contaminated. I'm just going to go right out and say it. I think Roswell is one of those.
Okay.
It's very possible that something weird happened in Roswell in July of 1947, but I think the case has just been so, as I said, contaminated by people who want to make a buck off of the story, people who want to make a name for themselves. I think the case has just been so contaminated that we don't really know what's what with Roswell, and I don't think we ever really will. So that's where I come into this to a certain degree, is just saying like, okay, I believe there is a fundamental reality to the UFO phenomenon, and there are many, many really spectacular and almost insanely crazy UFO events that are very hard to believe, that I actually think are signs that something real happened. But at the same time, I don't always fall in line with a lot of other UFO experts.
All right.
Who again follow things like Roswell.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Chad, thinking back to those congressional hearings in May, did you learn anything new? Did anything stand out to you as, hey, this is a game changer, or is this stuff that really researchers already knew about?
What really surprised me was when they released this in the middle of the pandemic, the general public was like, oh, well, what's next? You know, if they would have done this 10 years ago or maybe 10 years in the future, I think people would have exploded with interest that, The government is acknowledging there are things they can't explain. But when they did it in the pandemic, people were like, okay, what's next? Mm-hmm. That was the biggest surprise for me, because as Mark certainly knows, most of us in this field, we're not surprised that the government was finally saying there are things they can't explain. We've known this for many, many years and many decades. So for me, the biggest takeaway was the general public's kind of shrugging at it and saying, we've got other things to worry about.
Did it change anything from a perception standpoint? Did it perhaps normalize this conversation for some people? Mark, what do you think?
Oh, I think it has, definitely. From where I stand, anything that can reduce the ridicule factor when talking about UFOs is a good thing. And I think that the government's recent moves, even if they haven't moved the needle on actually how much we understand about the phenomenon, I think they have reduced some of the stigma associated with talking about UFOs. They've made the world a safer place for people like me and Chad to talk about our interests, and it's made the world a safer place for UFO witnesses to come forward and talk about what they've experienced.
Well, I was really fascinated to watch the 60 Minutes interviews that a group of naval pilots gave last year. They all lined up to recall their experiences. They were talking about these UFO encounters, and one of the pilots said these encounters actually began to feel commonplace. They happened so frequently that it was no longer completely strange for them to see something unexplained. How common are sightings like in Wisconsin, Chad? I mean, is this something that is reported quite frequently?
We have daily sightings in Wisconsin, and we know the overwhelming majority of people that see something, they don't report it. Mm-hmm. Either they don't know who to report it to, or they try to rationalize it away as must have been a misidentification of something, or they simply don't want the publicity or their neighbors to think they're crazy. Just getting back to what Mark said about how people are now coming to the fact that it's not bizarre to report these things. And I've noticed this over the last few decades of speaking, that in the old days, people would come up to you and kind of look around and in a hushed tone tell you their story. Mm-hmm. But now you have people in an audience just raising their hand saying, this is what I spotted. And whether they're diehard believers or skeptics or something in between, they are a lot more comfortable coming forward. So we do get a ton of reports, but we know the overwhelming majority go unreported.
Well, what are some of the typical things that people report seeing to you, Chad? Are there commonalities that you can identify?
The most common report I receive is what your standard close encounter of the first kind, just strange lights in the sky, people noticing something moving about, often in directions or maneuvers that they don't think any known aircraft can duplicate. And sometimes it's a fleeting event. They only see it for a few seconds, but it catches their eye. Other times people pull over on the side of the road when they're driving and watch this thing. So for me, the majority of sightings I receive are the just strange, weird light in the sky that people can't explain. You know, there are smaller cases that I like to call the high strangeness ones, where things get really baffling, but those are a lot fewer than the majority of what I receive.
The number to call if you'd like to ask our guests a question or share your experience, 800-780-9742. You can email us as well at ideas@wpr.org. Mark, take me through an investigation. If somebody reports a sighting, you want to take a harder look. What are the steps? What do you do?
Well, for about 5 years, I was a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network. It's probably the world's biggest amateur UFO research organization. And what I would do in that capacity would be, I would be assigned a case from MUFON headquarters, which meant that someone in Wisconsin had reported a case. That case would be referred to me. I would contact the subject or the witness and have them recount their story to me. If it was someone who was within driving distance, that was a huge bonus, because then I could go talk to them face to face. And that's really a big deal. I'm sure Chad would agree with this. When you're interviewing a witness over the phone, sure, you get the facts. But when you're interviewing a witness face to face, in person, you see their body language. You hear the stress in their voice when they're describing their experience. You see their facial expressions. And, you know, and sometimes they're expressing fear, sometimes they're expressing wonderment. So those are the things you pick up on when you're lucky enough to do an in-person interview. And then you basically write down your notes from the meeting you had with the witness and submit those notes to the Mutual UFO Network. And the importance of submitting these cases is we may never get anywhere with one particular case, but once a case is in the database, then it can be compared to other cases. We can start to look for, oh, have other people in this part of Wisconsin seen similar things? Does the time line up? Does the location line up? And then if we can start finding patterns in the cases, that's when the real value comes out.
Chad, can you add to that a little bit? What's an investigation like for you?
Well, I agree with Mark completely. And for me as well, it's very important to go to the place. And for a lot of UFO encounters or sightings, we're dealing with it in a past tense, that this event has already happened. It's gone. Sometimes it's years in the past when somebody finally comes forward for various reasons to report it. So oftentimes we're dealing with something that has already happened. But just going there, looking at the surroundings of where it happened, when it happened, getting a feel, are there any other possibilities of what people saw? Are there other witnesses? And oftentimes when you're in town talking with a witness, you start hearing about other people seeing things, and it just kind of spirals out to an area that you're not going to do over the internet or over the phone.
Do you approach the sightings with the assumption that it's real or that it isn't real and there's some logical explanation for it? I mean, what's your initial take on things, Mark?
I always try to go into things open-minded, not prejudge. If you prejudge, the person you're talking to is going to pick up on that pretty quickly, which is not to say, you know, some of the cases I investigated for MUFON were pretty far out there. I investigated a case once with a gentleman who said that aliens were threatening to kill him. Well, what do you do with that? It's hard to know what to do with that kind of information.
Yeah, sure. We have a caller. Jude from Iola is on the line. Welcome, Jude. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Did you have an experience you wanted to share with us?
Absolutely. It wasn't just a sighting. It actually landed in the field next to my driveway. And it was during May 16th, during the blood lunar eclipse. I was outside watching it, and I don't have any ambient light in my yard at all. And I watched it. Something peculiar, I couldn't understand why coming up the highway, I kept seeing these lights, but I never saw a vehicle. So I just kept looking at it. And then finally, I looked up at one of my trees that's about 25 feet tall, and it looked like there was a big black stick or branch that was, you know, just jetted out from it with no leaves or anything on it, but the leaves weren't on the trees yet. So I kept watching, and then all of a sudden it turned a little bit, and then I saw the blinking clear lights, and in a matter of seconds it landed right in the field, and it was rectangular, black, maybe 25 feet long. It wasn't very tall, but it just had clear lights go right through the center from corner to corner and just blinking. And I watched it and I watched it and I watched it. And I know in my mind that I saw this. Mm-hmm. And I know that I didn't imagine it. And it was pretty remarkable. I wasn't afraid or anything. I just observed it for as long as it was there. And then it just proceeded to take off.
Wow, what an experience. I'm going to ask Chad and Mark their thoughts on that after the break, but Jude, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. You are listening to Chad Lewis and Mark O'Connell on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on UFOs and ongoing research into documented sightings. Coming up, we'll hear more about some of the sightings reported in Wisconsin and about how researchers evaluate them. Your questions and stories about your own personal experiences with UFOs are welcome. Give us a call at 800 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Siewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Siewert. UFO researchers Mark O'Connell and Chad Lewis are our guests today as we explore the sightings of unexplained aerial phenomenon and the push to understand them. You're welcome to join in the conversation and ask your own questions, share your experiences. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call is 800-780-9742. Mark, Chad, we heard from Jude just a little while ago, and she had shared also off air with our producer that she had talked about this experience with a man in Door County who showed her a photo of what she thought was an identical UFO. What did you think about what Jude said? I mean, is that a typical experience? Mark, let's start with you.
Yes, that is a typical experience. In my experience investigating Wisconsin cases for MUFON, I talked with many, many people who described virtually the same thing that Jude did. And it brings to mind something that I always found curious. And Chad, I'll be interested to hear what Chad has to say about this. That when I would interview these witnesses, very often they would ask me two questions right off the bat. The first question was, what did I see? And the second question is, has anyone else ever seen this? And those questions became so regular to me that it sort of became my litmus test when I was interviewing a witness. If they started out asking those two questions, they got a big high score for credibility for me because it gave me the sense that they were trying to understand something that had really affected them in a deep way. And the only thing that could make them feel better about it is to talk to someone else who experienced the same thing.
We have Mary on the line from Eau Claire. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
So what is your experience?
Well, this is a long time ago, and it was right outside of Chippewa Falls, and I was driving a girlfriend home, and we had not been drinking at all or anything else,
sure.
Taking any other substance. And we were by the lake, and she lived by the lake. And when we were quite a ways away, more than a mile, I think, we saw this. It looked almost like there was a house on fire. And she lived there. It was kind of, what is that? What's wrong? And then it went away. I kept driving, and the fire. It was like fire big as a house, looked like flames coming up, regular colored flames and everything. And but then it went away, and we thought, it seems strange. Then as we got close to the lake, there used to be, it was the little lake near, there was a bridge there. We weren't to the bridge yet, and there was a bridge that went over a little bit. We saw lights in the field. There was a field there. It hadn't been built up yet. Mm-hmm. And kind of just a scrubby area, a small, like, bushes, and I guess there were a couple of trees, but... And then we got close to that, and we saw lights in that field.
Huh. Okay.
And I stopped the car, and we stared at this thing, and it wasn't very far away. Maybe, I don't know, 10 yards maybe.
Okay.
But this is strange because I never really heard anything else about this. And again, I'd like to know what it was. So would she. I talked to her every once in a while. But it looked like a cut out piece of, it was on a little bush or near a little bush.
Hmm.
And it was a light, but it wasn't coming from anywhere. It was like static.
Okay.
And we could see the bush. I could see the bush really clearly. And I can see it now in my mind. Mm. And it was a wavy edge, kind of, and it was flat, like it was a piece of material or something that was emitting light, or it was a, you know, it was a flat thing. It wasn't round or anything. It was just a flat thing.
Okay.
And it was lighting the area, and it lit the bush, and we were stopped, and it was late at night, and...
Well, I want to ask Chad, is this typical of something that have you heard anything like this before, like what Mary has shared with us?
Two things stand out for me, and thank you for sharing that report, is that a lot of the people that experience something similar to this, they're not actively looking for it. They're not UFO hunters out scouring the night sky. They're just people who are going about their lives when they experience something they simply can't explain. And oftentimes they are, their attention is grabbed by a bright light, and often they'll pull over. Mm-hmm. Many of these are happening in the vehicle because that's where you're covering ground. So this rings out to me as a very common type of occurrence of people seeing something they simply are baffled by. As Mark said, they're trying to grasp what they actually saw.
Sure.
They're not coming forward saying this was an alien coming down to abduct me. They said, What did I see? Please help me investigate this.
Sure. We have another caller. Kelly from Eau Claire is on the line. Thanks for calling, Kelly. Kelly, are you there? I think we may have lost Kelly, so hopefully Kelly can call back, but we do have another caller. Actually, I am going to have to wait until I can get that one back, but I'm curious how... about some of the famous Wisconsin stories as we're working to get the phones. One famous Wisconsin cake is this pancake story from 1961. Mark, tell us about that one.
This is one of my favorite UFO stories. And it sounds very silly when you hear it at first, but it was taken very seriously at the time. I want to stress that. A man named Joe Simonton, who lived outside of Eagle River, looked outside his back window once. This is in 1961. Looks out his back window, sees a flying saucer land in his yard, and goes out to investigate. A door opens in the side of this object, and two men come out, two perfectly ordinary looking men, although Joe described them as looking Italian, whatever that's supposed to mean.
Okay.
So these two men come out, greet Joe silently, and one of them is holding sort of a water jug. Mm-hmm. And it's empty. So Joe fills it up from his backyard well and hands it back to them. And then these two men show him inside their ship. And there's a third person inside the ship seriously making pancakes on a griddle. And they give Joe Simonton a stack of pancakes. They get back in their spaceship and they fly away.
Okay.
But the story doesn't end there. Because Joe was friends with the local judge, and the local judge said, hey, you should report this to the Air Force's Project Blue Book. They may be interested in hearing about this.
Mm-hmm.
So they contacted Blue Book. Blue Book sent their superstar investigator, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, actually flew from Chicago up to Eagle River, retrieved the pancakes, had them sent to a test lab. They were found to be perfectly ordinary buckwheat pancakes. But the story remains. What actually did Joe Simonton experience? Dr. Hynek actually took Joe's story very seriously.
We have Kelly back. Kelly, sorry that we lost you earlier. What did you want to share with us?
Okay, it happened years and years and years ago. I was a much younger person than I am now. I lived in Adams Friendship and laying on the couch, you know, kind of dozing off, sleeping. My German Shepherd, very well-trained German Shepherd, I could tell him, watch him, and he'd show his teeth and growl. And all of a sudden, there's a flash outside, like a lightning bolt. And I kind of woke up, and then I kind of dozed back off. And I don't know why, but I had a sense that there was something out the window right by the couch. I was so scared, I couldn't even get up to look out the window. but my dog was looking out the window with his ears straight up, and I froze. I could not move. I could not do anything. And the only thing I could think of was I was probably silently abducted or something. I have no idea. But I knew there was something out there just because of the way the dog was looking out that window.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Chad, what do you think about animals? I mean, do they maybe have that sense? I mean, Kelly was talking about how his dog was just, you know, ears straight up. Is that something that you would normally hear?
A lot of people who have experiences often first notice that their pets are acting strangely. And similar with farmers that have experiences, they'll notice maybe their livestock or their cattle. They might think of predators in the area because they're acting very strange. The only problem is we're not able to interview the animals to see what was exactly causing it. But it seems to be like a first indication for a lot of people. And I was really interested from this caller saying that, you know, he couldn't garner the strength or the will to look out at whatever it was. Because there are other cases where people have the exact opposite effect, where it's almost as though they're drawn to this area to look at, to experience it, like they're meant to see it. So I'm fascinated here. We have both areas of the spectrum.
Can I just add something to what Chad said?
Mm-hmm.
I also find it curious. This seems like a case where, and if your caller's still on the line, about this. Oh, okay. I'd be curious to know if there was any missing time involved in this encounter.
Mm-hmm.
Very often situations like this that the witness described, the witness will wake up the next day and be like, oh, it's 2 hours later than I thought it was. What happened? What happened last night? This happens very frequently.
Interesting. We also have Aubrey on the line, also from Eau Claire. Welcome, Aubrey.
Hi.
Hi. What is your experience you wanted to share with us?
It's actually really crazy that I heard this on the radio this morning because this sighting happened last night.
Whoa. Okay.
Driving home from Minnesota on 94, and we had just crossed the river, and I'm just looking out the window because my friend is driving. And I see these, like, at first I thought it was an airplane because I just see all these, like, strange lights in the air. But it looks like it's, like, switching forms and moving around. I'm like, this can't be an airplane. And as it flew, like, basically really close to us and overhead, I noticed that it was, like, actually three different objects in the air. And they almost looked like deep sea submarines, but flying,
mm-hmm.
Or just humongous drones. And two of them had like headlights and one of them didn't. And three of them had the green lights and red lights on them. So it was really interesting.
That is interesting. Mark, do you have any follow-up questions for Aubrey? She's still on the line.
I'm amazed. How long did this event last, Aubrey, and how did the objects disappear, or how did they leave the scene?
I guess actually, like, we left the scene because we were just driving on 94, so just hit the Wisconsin border, and they were just flying not super low, but also not super high in the air, not at, like, a airplane height, just flying in, like, a formation. And they just flew over us and, as far as I know, just kept going. But yeah, we were driving, so couldn't see the rest of it.
Chad, what do you think she saw?
I'm interested if your friend saw what you saw as well.
My friend who was driving did not see it, but my friend in the back seat did see it. And he was also very confused on what it was. And we were the rest of the ride home, like, trying to figure out, like, what was that?
So it was more than one person then.
If you didn't hear this show, would you have reported this to anyone?
Probably not. It was just kind of a coincidence this morning that I got up and I was listening to this on the radio. I'm like, oh my gosh, I like saw something last night.
Whoa, yeah. Well, thank you for sharing it with us. I'm glad that you called. It's always so interesting to hear the experiences that people have. And we have, let's see, we have Tom. We have Tom from Mellon. Tom, welcome to Route 51.
Hi.
Hi. What did you want to share with us?
It's back in 1972 when I was in boarding school in Barbados, down in the Caribbean. I went out to smoke a cigarette out on the soccer field, and when we were looking into the sky, we saw these three lights approaching, and it was odd because they seemed close enough to hear them, but there was no sound whatsoever. They were coming directly at us, and all of a sudden they stopped, and they were too close. We thought they were going to be crash landing into the cane fields there, but when it stopped, it just stayed there for almost 5 minutes, and then immediately took a hard veer off to the right at an incredible speed and disappeared. And when I looked it up on the internet just recently, I looked at 1972 Barbados UFO, and there was an identical description of it by a tourist on the beach, an American tourist, except that he saw it a lot closer. At arm's length, it was 2 feet long. And when we looked at it at arm's length, it was only about 2 inches. But there's nothing that could have left that fast or veered off that fast that I can believe came from that wasn't a UFO.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Mark, what do you think Tom saw?
Well, first of all, Tom, you mentioned us. Who else was with you?
Another friend of mine. We were both about 15 years old.
Okay. And have you ever discussed this with your friends since then?
No. We told it to all the other students.
Right.
We asked him to go in and get the other students who were in the cafeteria to come and see it. But before he came back, it had already veered off. So he didn't actually see it veer off. But the person on the beach described it exactly as I saw it.
Well, that's pretty uncommon that there is a completely independent report that corroborates yours. I'm really fascinated by that.
Thank you.
Wish we could track down some of these folks.
Yes, no kidding. Thank you so much, Tom. You're listening to Mark O'Connell and Chad Lewis on Route 51 for a discussion on UFOs and UFO research. We have some callers on the line, and you're welcome to join as well. 800-780-9742, the number to call. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward with our guests, Chad Lewis and Mark O'Connell. Today, we're hearing about unexplained aerial phenomena, what we commonly call UFOs, and what the latest congressional hearings revealed about the search for answers. If you have a question for our guests or you have an experience to share, you're welcome to email us at ideas@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call, 800-780-9742. We'll talk with Don from Merrill in just a moment. But before we do, one thing that has come up repeatedly in this program is that people need to report what they see. And this is something that came out of the congressional hearings, too. If you see it, it should be reported. But how does someone report what they see if they can't explain it? Chad, what's the process?
Believe it or not, a lot of people call law enforcement. Okay. Thinking it might be a threat or some emergency. The previous caller talking about something on fire might call the fire department. But there are a lot of organizations in the United States and the world that collect these stories. And it's easier than ever to do it online. You can call. I think a lot of people will also look at places like the National UFO Reporting Center to see if somebody else spotted something the same time they did. because that's a common occurrence for people that contact me. They said they've looked for other witnesses, not only in their area, but throughout the country as well.
Can you recommend a specific organization like MUFON, or where can people go to report these sightings?
So you certainly can't go wrong with MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. They have a branch in every state and throughout the world. MUFON is how I got interested in UFOs back as a teenager by joining MUFON. But there are many others. As I mentioned, the National UFO Reporting Center is a very credible one that a lot of people use. Also, you can just Google UFO investigators and you'll get, you know, smart, credible people like Mark there collecting all of these stories, too.
Great. And I will get some links from you after the program, and we'll put those up at WPR.org/Route 51 for folks that do want to report something. Right now, we have Don from Merrill on the line who wants to share an experience. Welcome, Don.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for waiting for us.
Sure. 30 years ago, I was at my friend Darren's house, and his parents were sitting in the living, in the kitchen, and suddenly his mom said, "What the heck is that?" And we all went to the window in the kitchen, and it was about 9 o'clock at night, and I would say about 2 or 3 miles away there was a. It looked like almost like an afterburner of a jet, and in that distance, it was about the size of a quarter, but it was perfectly round. We got the binoculars, and Darren and Dan and their parents and I, we all looked through the binoculars, and we all described it exactly the same. It looked like the afterburner of a jet, but it had no, but it was all one color. There wasn't a central heat source, you know, like an afterburner of a jet. You can have, like, it's more yellow in the center. This was, like, all orange, but it was bright. And we're watching it, and we had been watching it for probably a good 10 minutes, and suddenly it went from being essentially the size of a quarter to within a split second being the size of barely a pinhead. It almost disappeared completely. We did contact the police department. They thought that we had seen, like, maybe some kind of a jet or something along that line, but it did not move. You know, we couldn't see a definable movement. It was just this bright orange orb, and then suddenly it just shrunk down to almost disappearing, not quite.
And you all saw the same thing?
And we all saw the same thing.
Wow. And, Mark, what do you think about that? That everybody saw the same thing. That stands out to me.
Oh, yeah. If you only have one witness, I mean, that's great. But one witness can't really demonstrate anything. If you've got a group of witnesses who are reporting the same thing at the same time, that's pretty powerful. I also think it's interesting how you describe the way it disappeared. Did it zoom away at phenomenal speed, or did it just poof out of existence? It's often really hard to tell for people who've seen these things.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe it. It almost like it just shrunk. There wasn't a flash or anything like that. That would be, indicating like some kind of propulsion or anything like that. It was essentially, you know, say the size of a bright orange ping pong ball, and then went down to the size of almost a pinhead in literally a split second after we'd been watching it for at least a good 10 minutes. We couldn't take our eyes off of it. We're looking through the binoculars saying, what is this? Is it, you know, it was almost like the sun was out in the, you know, but in darkness. It was just so weird. Something I have never experienced.
Chad, do you have any other questions for Don about this experience? And Don, thank you for sharing it with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And I think this again illustrates, this is the third or fourth call where somebody was telling us a story that happened many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. These situations, these experiences, they stick with people. Mm-hmm. And I'm really fascinated by that end of the field. I'm fascinated in what these things mean for our belief systems and our human perception. So I'm always interested in how people have these stories from many decades ago sometimes, but they stuck with them. They're always still looking to explain what happened to them. And for me, that's just as telling as their experiences themselves.
We have Carl.
I agree wholeheartedly with Chad. And I wanted to add that very often these people are trying to describe something that we simply don't have words for.
Yes.
And I think you hear that now and then with your callers. Doesn't mean that their story is shaky. It means that they just don't have the right words to describe what they experienced.
Yeah, it's hard to put all of that into words when it's not something that we normally see. Carl from Eau Claire is on the line. Carl, thanks for calling.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what did you see?
Well, it's interesting. My way I was going to start out is that etched in my mind forever. And this was also 30 years ago. I was on my way up north from Minneapolis. And because I had stopped at the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Casino to be naughty with some gambling in my younger years, I didn't get to the cabin until 2 a.m., which is right on the water. And the lake is approximately a mile by 3 miles. So the short way across the lake, I saw a bright light that I watched for 2 hours that I had no feeling for how far beyond the wood line it was across the lake because I had no perspective. But it just sat there, bright as could be, and seemed to hover up and down and back and forth really slowly. But because it was a really bright light, I could understand that maybe that was stationary. I don't know. But I've always been fascinated by this memory and have never had an answer for it. And there was a little bit of a glow as if there was moisture in the air. So the light wasn't a bright point, but it was hugely voluminous and bright. And I couldn't watch it for more than 2 hours, and I was just dead tired. So I don't know. You know, I've read about orbs, and I've tried to understand what I saw, but I have no answer.
I don't know. Mark, what do you say about that? What do you say to Carl? What do you think he saw?
What Carl saw lines up with what a whole lot of people see. And I've had experiences talking with UFO witnesses, Carl, who have started watching UFO reality shows on TV. And out of the blue, they'll see something in this TV show that's like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I saw. I'd be curious to know if you follow those kinds of TV shows and if you've ever had that experience of seeing something just like what you saw.
Again, the number.
Go ahead, Carl. I was just going to reply. I've only ever read about my experience with my own research because I do a lot of research on various things for a living. But I've never seen a UFO show that, you know, I would tend to maybe not watch a show like that for maybe more than 2 or 3 minutes.
Well, I want to thank you for calling, Carl. The number to call is 800-780-9742. I'm curious, Chad, people are sometimes reluctant to come forward with the things that they see. They don't want to report it. They think they're maybe going to, you know, sound crazy to somebody. But what would you say to somebody who's reluctant to come forward?
I think we can go back to Mark's great point that for a single sighting, we may not learn everything there is to know. But when we start grouping these together, we can start to piece together certain common aspects to it. Just on this show, how many of your callers have mentioned water near their sighting? Whereas if we just took this one caller, you know, people might not put that together. So I think it's very important, even if people don't want their name associated with it, they don't want anything, a follow-up on it, just to have it out there. And I've had people tell me stories that happened 40 years ago who said, I don't want it investigated. I just don't want this experience to die with me. I want it to be out there in case other people have had it. So I think that's the importance of reporting it, not so much figuring out what actually happened to you, because I think we put too much emphasis on the witness of how are they supposed to know what happened to them when we've been researching UFOs as a group for 50, 60 plus years, and sometimes we don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, I don't know what's going on. So I think there's an unfair emphasis that all of a sudden somebody should be able to explain what they saw when they're just as baffled as the rest of us.
Mark, what do you have to say about that? What should people keep in mind when they're deciding whether or not to report something?
They should keep in mind that they are not alone. That's the simplest way to put it. There are, I always tell people, you would be amazed at how many people you know, family members, friends, neighbors, coworkers, you'd be amazed at how many people you know who have had a really unusual experience involving what they can best describe as a UFO or even an alien encounter. It's just amazing. And if you create sort of a ridicule-free zone in your social interactions and you let it be known that you love hearing UFO stories and you don't judge, it's just amazing how many people will come out of the woodwork or come up to you shyly and say, you know what, something strange happened to me once. I'd love to tell you about it.
We have time for one last call here. It's Philip from the Rhinelander area. Thanks for calling, Philip.
Hi. It was May of this year at 2:39 a.m. I had an object about the size of a Volkswagen Beetle hovering in my backyard. I live out in the country, and it was lit up in a brilliant white, blue, and green light. I walked out on my deck, and there was no sound whatsoever. It was about 20, 25 feet in the air. And my first thought, it was a drone, but it couldn't have been because there was no sound, and it seemed a little big for that. It had a white light that was focused on the ground like it was looking for something. That's what I got to say.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Philip. Do you have any questions for Philip, Chad?
I'm interested in how did this experience or sighting end?
It just slowly floated off.
Okay.
Right along the railroad tracks that run behind my house.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. He mentioned something that about drones. How has the drone industry impacted all this? I mean, are some of what we're seeing perhaps explained by drones? What do you think, Mark?
I think drones have made life very, very difficult for a lot of UFO researchers because they're still so new, and there's still things I think we don't know about how a sighting of a drone, how you process that, because a drone operates in ways that most aircraft we're familiar with doesn't behave. So. Drones are a real wild card in UFO research. They throw a lot of investigators off. They don't do a whole lot of good. I've never heard of any drone encountering a UFO. It's something that I think is going to be an issue and is going to be a problem for us for a while.
We have about 2 minutes left, and I'm hoping to get your thoughts on this. If UFOs are real and the government now acknowledges that they are, then it would stand to reason that there perhaps is life beyond Earth. So I guess I want to ask each of your thoughts on that. What do you think is out there, Chad? Let's start with you.
Great question. Perfect for the last 2 minutes of the show. I'm fascinated, and I think I agree with Neil deGrasse Tyson when he says, I don't think we're intelligent enough to even know what questions to ask, much less have the answers. I think UFOs may tend to be many things, but they may tend to be something we have no theory about even right now. Obviously, some people believe they're, you know, extraterrestrial craft or other dimensional craft or top secret military or a combination of all the above. But I'm fascinated by the really bizarre cases where maybe our theories right now don't even explain what they are.
Mark, about 45 seconds left. What are your thoughts? What's out there?
I believe there's intelligent life out in the universe. Whether it's reaching out and trying to contact us is hard to say, but I think there's evidence that that's possible. There are so many sightings by so many people that have not been explained. I just think it's beyond belief that we're here alone.
My favorite professor in grad school used to always say, and anything that you can imagine is possible. Would you agree, Chad?
I completely agree. And I think many of these people that experience something, they're experiencing it. But what they're experiencing, I don't know.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us today. We'll put some links to report sightings at WPR.org/Route 51 after the program. You're listening to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward, extending a sincere thanks to our guests, Mark O'Connell and Chad Lewis. Our producers are Joy Ratch-Kramer and Kate Spranger. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Joy is our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program, as well as our previous programs at WPR.org/Route 51. You can also subscribe to our podcast, available from your favorite platform. If you have an idea for a future program, email us at ideas@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. Next week, we'll be back with another fascinating discussion, and we hope you'll join us. Until then, we're heading out of town.